guest this week is a legendary journalist and all-around local media hero in Western Massachusetts, a place I've called home for the past 40 years. Although I've had several simultaneous homes in different parts of the country during this stretch of time, including New York City, Washington, D.C., and South Florida, and before that, Los Angeles and San Diego, the Springfield, Massachusetts area has played a very special part in my life. And in this beautiful, salt-of-the-earth segment of America, my guest is well-known to just about all its civically, socially, and politically active citizens. After decades of service, the recently retired executive editor of Reminder Publishing continues his multifaceted career in mass communications. I'm not sure he understands the meaning of the word retirement. In his illustrious career, he's worked as a newspaper reporter and editor, freelance writer, radio talk show host, college instructor, and was the editor of two nationally distributed magazines about animation. He's written 7 books to date and continues to write as well as appear as a host for Focus Springfield Cable Television. He's covered hundreds of school board and city council meetings and conducted thousands of interviews with local leaders. He's an expert on cigars and brandy, old films, cartoons, comics, and even strippers. He's an amazing guy and a quintessential example of the tremendous importance of local grassroots journalism in sustaining and preserving American freedom and democracy. Today's program started out with me appearing as a guest on his podcast titled The Ink-Stained Wretch. But the conversation went deep into some very, very meaty material, so I decided to dip into it and extract some content from my podcast. So here we go. My guest this week is G. Michael Dobbs. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Interview, the weekly podcast from Podcast One and Talkers Magazine for communications professionals, pop culture aficionados, political junkies, media freaks, science enthusiasts, fans of radio, followers of technology, and the philosophically curious. If you find this show to be of interest and value, please subscribe to it and give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Okay, here we go. An uninterrupted conversation with legendary Western Massachusetts journalist, reporter, author, talk show host, and all-around media guru, G. Michael Dobbs.
You're one of the guys who is a legitimate expert. And having been in journalism for years, there's a ton of experts who aren't experts. They may speak a good game, but when it comes to talk radio, when it comes to this large industry, you legitimately have your finger on the pulse. And right now, one of the things that I'm preparing is both a written piece and then a Focus Springfield panel about how local media in our market is not growing, it's shrinking. And it's shrinking because a number of decisions have been made to downsize. And it's got me very worried. So I guess I want to ask you first, is talk radio on the upswing? Is because of the election, is it remaining stable, or do you see that there's maybe a little bit of shrinkage in terms of the number of stations, the number of programs, and listenership?
Very good question. First of all, I want to say that I appreciate you calling me an expert. I hesitate to refer to myself as an expert. I try to be a humble expert because things are changing so rapidly, and there's so many complicated aspects to media today, and it plays such a powerful role in who we are and what we are as a species, let alone as, you know, just people. It's kind of headstrong to say, yes, I'm an expert. I've become increasingly humble as we go further and further into the 21st century. So I want to thank you for saying that about me, but I don't lean too heavily on it. I feel more like a constant student. And I think we're all students chasing a runaway train. That being said, I also want to take a moment to congratulate you as a longtime resident of this area, which I never thought I would be. I came here planning to only be here for a few months, and I wound up being here for almost 40 years. I want to thank you for your service as a local media practitioner, as a journalist, as a multimedia participant, video, audio, radio, print, local meetings, local, events. You've been on top of it. You've been a servant to the area. And I want to take this opportunity to tell you how much I've admired you and what a great job you've done for the people of Western Massachusetts. That being said, is talk radio growing? Is talk radio shrinking? It's doing both. It's growing in proportion to the universe of radio. But as the old saying, when the tide goes down, all the ships go down. And when the tide comes up, all the ships go. Radio is shrinking. All 20th century media is shrinking. Newspapers, motion pictures, television, stations, TV stations, radio stations, things that have appliances, a radio, a television, newsprint, books. I mean, all of these 20th century media are shrinking for reasons that are obvious. Changing technology creates changing sociology. And the years go by very quickly. So we're dealing with talk radio remaining a major part of radio. As a matter of fact, talk radio has been for decades the savior of radio. If it wasn't for talk radio, I don't know where radio would be today. But talk radio is no longer the shiny new media object that everybody, wow, talk radio is the national marketplace of ideas, and this is your town hall of the air. Get on the air and speak your mind. And, that's kind of quaint at this point. Talk radio has been successful in paving the way for so many other forms of media today that it's been obscured as to what legacy media is, what mainstream media is, what big time media is, small time media. Every platform could be worldwide if it wanted to be. You can destroy your life and career on the smallest website if you say the wrong thing. Everything is connected. It's so different today. So I think that the day of talk radio being this buzzy, special, form of media that his power over the presidency and all that, I think that talk radio too has to be a bit humbled and share that with all kinds of exotic digital platforms and players, regulated and unregulated, and the changes are just getting started.
You were one of the very first persons I know. In fact, you are the second person I know. My buddy Joe Citro was the first guy who told me about podcasts years ago. You have long championed the concept that for spoken word radio, that podcasts are sort of the wave of the future. And now we've got, it's just not audio podcasts, which were the original ones. Now we have these, what's called a video podcast, which in my ancient mind, I think of it as a television show that I see on the web, as opposed mm-hmm. to a podcast, which is something I can listen to in the car. But that's just me.
But it is a television show you can see on the web, even though your notion may be old fashioned, your notion is exactly right. And when you watch a movie on a video, if you watch The Godfather on a VCR, does it become a video or is it still a motion picture? Is it still cinema? All of these categories overlap each other. And that's one of the things I found fascinating about not only being a broadcaster, but being in the trades all my career, is I had a chance to have some input into the categories that we use in order to be able to communicate about media. But they're not necessarily set in stone.
So, are you finding that podcasts are replacing or augmenting a spoken word broadcast? And what I mean by this is, one thing I always try to emphasize as a reminder, although none of the owners ever listened to me, to be perfectly frank.
Well, that's not unusual.
Is that you create content and you put it on as many platforms as you can because you don't know where your audience is. So you can have a physical newspaper. You can have a website. you could take that same content and put it on a podcast, and then you can hype everything on social media. That concept, I think, is still a very valid concept, because if you do an interview, if you write something, if you photograph something, if you record something, the best way is to spread it out, in my opinion, so people from, you can get where they are, because the era of everyone trooping down to a newsstand and picking up that daily paper because that's their habit and that's where the information is, that's over. You got the information is still needed, in my opinion, but you need to supply it in a way that any possible member of your audience can get it and use it and enjoy it. So in talk radio, do you find that you're doing a broadcast? Does that broadcast routinely get turned into a podcast? So now you can get the people who maybe missed your live broadcast, but now can listen to what you created.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the word is augment podcasting, whether it's video podcasting, which we don't call them podcasts as much as we call them videos. You know, if it's on YouTube, it's a video. People don't often say podcasts. But no, you could be, it augments what you do as a talent or as a content creator. Radio stations are also production companies. Their formats are their product as well as other services they provide. The problem is not what it means from a standpoint of getting your stuff out there. The problem is, what does it mean in terms of getting your stuff paid for? How do you make a living giving everything away for free? This is the issue that we face. I view things through an industrial eye, because my constituents are basically professionals who want to understand what they're doing going forward into this crazy jungle. So the first thing I think is it a business? And I've come to the conclusion in this brave new world that we're at a time now where the artist, the performer, the talent, the singer, the writer, the talk show host has the privilege of getting to more people than ever before through more ways and not get paid. you're judged now by how many people are willing to sample your product for free, as right. opposed to how many people will plunk down their money on the counter or at the box office or at the record store or on the Arbitron diary and have a tangible box office tally to the value of your work. So it's a terrible time to be an artist, as well as a great time. It's great because you and I could do this conversation we're having, put it on YouTube, and theoretically anybody in the world can hear it. That wasn't the case in 1970, 75, 80, 85. It was a limited place that you could be heard or seen. It had a gatekeeper. You had to break into the industry. Half of your efforts were breaking in, and the other half was keeping the job, and somewhere in the middle you did something. Now anybody can do anything. You can take a picture of your dog, you know, relieving itself in the backyard, and maybe get a million people looking at it. And this has thrown the industry into a certain level of chaos. And much of the shrinkage that we referred to earlier in terms of mainstream media, and I consider radio stations and that paradigm to be part of the mainstream media past, still hanging in there, but it's definitely of another century. Part of the problem that these industries are facing is monetizing. How do you make money with all of these platforms? And that answer has not yet been clearly apparent.
So many years ago, I went to, I think it was the New England Newspaper Association. They used to have a big confab in Boston. And I went there specifically to see what the strategies were on how to monetize your newspaper content on a website. And at that point, the idea was, well, you're going to sell these ads. And how many ads can you sell these blocks that are links to an advertiser on a page? And there was all of this science. And then there was science, I should say, in quotes. And then it was, should these ads wink and blink at you? Should they have movement? And I think they missed the whole point. My industry of newspapers decided to go the route of commercial radio and television. which is you have wonderful content that we create, and we are going to ask you to look at these ads that are surrounding the content. And that has worked. It worked very well for decades for radio and television. The only industry that understood that there was a problem with that, because how many ads do you need to sell in order to finance this web operation, was the porn industry. And what the porn industry did was to do what magazines do, which is you buy a magazine or you buy a subscription. They understood that they could show you, you know, a little bit of salacious something to get you interested, but then they want money. Of course, this was years before Pornhub being a free porn service. But my point is that the magazine idea was you are buying into it by either buying a copy of a magazine or buying a subscription. So newspapers had a real problem in trying to abandon that quote unquote free format and then having to see if they can still keep an audience by putting up a paywall.
Oh yeah, they set themselves back a number of years by doing that.
They should have put up a paywall to begin with. Honest, that's my honest opinion. I just think from the get-go, we should say this content is worth not only your time, but a little bit of your money. Just like you subscribe to a print newspaper, you need to subscribe somehow to our website. And it took them years, took them decades to figure this out.
Because there was no unified they. There's no they. They is really independent operators, small groups, big groups, small companies, solo people. And you can't get everybody in it. It's called collusion. You can't get an entire industry to say, okay, we are not going to give away anything. The reason they gave it away was because they didn't think anybody would pay for it. And they wanted to, of course, lure them into the habit of getting their content online or in other places other than on that printed page. It became difficult to get people to pay for internet content because there was so much available for free. And that was the problem. Even to this day, I explore my own psyche. I learn how others think by how I think. I look to my own reaction. And my own reaction is I resent it when the paywall comes down and I can't see the damn article. I don't want to subscribe to the blah, blah Times just to see one article that I heard about or maybe that I'm quoted in. You get this feeling that we have runaway subscriptions that, you know, everything is a la carte, you know, and then you lose track of it and you lose track of your passwords and it becomes an inconvenient pain in the butt. So there's a lot of reasons how that happened. It wasn't that they made a mistake. It may have wound up this way no matter what. You paid for the local newspaper. You paid to have it brought to your house because there was no other way of getting the news. You paid for subscriptions. If you want to read Playboy, you want to read the Springfield Republican, you want to, whatever it is you want to read, you pay for it because there's no other way to get it. But if you knew that, you know, hey, they're online and there's another paper that's the same story and this one is into AP, you know, and well, you know, you're going to think twice about $4 a month or. And everything feels so scammy. I mean, you know, you can cancel after 1 month. Yeah, you're going to forget. You're not going to remember. And people are afraid of that. So I don't have easy answers for these questions. I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't either. But all of this fascinates me because we're talking about the survival of certain media and how are they going to survive? You know, I have a 12-year-old grandson. I don't think he has ever once listened to a radio. In fact, I don't think he, in fact, I know there's no radio in their house. There's nothing. There still may be a radio in the car, but you and I are of the time where you bought a little table radio. When I was a teenager, I had a table radio on my desk next to my bed. And at nighttime, I used to play the game of how far a AM signal could I find, you
right.
know?
Right.
I tried to.
That table radio was a magic box. It was more than just an appliance. That table radio was the real world. Right. That table radio was where radio stations came out of, and everybody had a table radio, and they had two of them, three of them in their house, and they had one in their car, and maybe they carried one in their pocket. That was the official playing field. So if you had a job at a radio station, even if it's a small one, you're in the magic box. That you're on the front page of the newspaper. You're in the movie. Imagine, I broke into the movies. I'm in this movie. I'm an extra, but my career is off and running. You know, I broke in. I'm now in the movies. There's no magic box anymore. Now, I could make a case that your smartphone is the new transistor radio, and that the Alexa, speakers are the new table radios and all that. And there are new forms of appliances to get radio station product or audio shows that we consider to be parts of what used to be a radio station. But they're not magic. What's missing is the magic. And that underlies the problem with getting paid as well.
So I got to ask you what you think was talk radio's role in this last election. I think it's fair to say that talk radio has been characterized as a large part of it has been conservative. There are notable exceptions of quote unquote liberal folks, you know, from Tom Hartman to Stephanie Miller, people like that. And the reason I'm asking this is that Donald Trump spends 3 hours with Joe Rogan on his podcast. I don't know if Donald Trump, for instance, spent any time doing talk radio like Sean Hannity, you know, these superstars of both radio and TV in the conservative world. And I just wanted to get a sense from you if you think that talk radio played a role in this last election.
It played a role, but it didn't play the leading role. It didn't play the only role. It didn't make the crucial difference. There's a couple of things that you mentioned, but first of all, the bottom line answer is talk radio is still important in political discussion, but it's not the only platform out there. And talk show hosts on radio are not the only talk show hosts in media. We call it talk media. I wrote a piece in Talkers a couple of weeks ago that Donald Trump's appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast was a tipping point at which we finally, you know, should acknowledge that podcasts are a player too. Not every podcast is big, just like not every radio show is big, but there are some big podcasts out there that are bigger than radio shows. And I'll tell you another dirty little secret is there are people out there who have more followers on X, Instagram, and Facebook, and the like, than some radio stations have listenerships. So we're in a different era, and we have to get our head out of the sand. So talk radio is still very important, but it's not all important. And it plays a role, but it doesn't play the only role. It's part of a bigger machine, a bigger paradigm. And people like Joe Rogan are the new Rush Limbaughs. There's no question about it. And those of us who still have a sentimentality toward the glory days of radio have to learn how, which is something I've been teaching the people in our industry for decades, how to integrate the magic and the mission of radio as we knew it in the 20th century into the digital era of the 21st century. And that's why I called our convention the New Media Seminar. Business Week dubbed Talkers the Bible of Talk Radio. I added on to it, and the new talk media. We talked about podcasting before the term was even popular. And I have basically encouraged my major message to the industry on an industrial level. The radio industry has been to learn how to be in the digital era without losing the specialness that makes radio radio, the aesthetic of what is radio. We've certainly learned it's not AM or FM. It could be AM, FM, or smartphone, or anything. You know, it could be your refrigerator talking to you. But what makes it radio? And that the answer to that is going to be the answer to whether or not radio will remain viable in any way, shape, or form in the culture that is yet to unfold in the 21st century.
See, one word I have always used to describe you is a futurist. You're just not content with what is now. You want to look ahead. You want to look ahead to see where the trends are going for your industry so you can respond appropriately in covering it, offering advice, et cetera, et cetera. I like your advocacy of podcasts before that word even was invented. You sort of saw where things were going because of the capacity for digital media.
Mm-hmm. I still do see where it's going, and I spend my time doing that. I refuse to become a merchant of nostalgia. I would do a great oldie show on radio someplace. I love the old time stuff. I love history. I rather consider myself a historian, not a merchant of nostalgia, and a futurist only from the standpoint that that's where we're heading. You know, if you're playing baseball and a guy hits a grounder to you, immediately in your mind you're saying, okay, how many times is it going to bounce? And what do I do if it hits a rock or bounces in the wrong direction? And boom, you get ready for it and it comes to you. Well, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, you know, the future hitting grounders to us. and it doesn't matter. Once you miss it and it goes in the rearview mirror, you know, it's nostalgia. It was an opportunity missed or with the good old days. Or you understand that if we don't learn a lesson from what happened 50 years ago, we might be doomed to do it again. All of these good things that come from history. But no, we've got to keep our eye on where we're going, especially with the future coming at us quicker and quicker and quicker. Because where does the present stop and the future begin? You know, there's no wall. There's no door. It's very heady stuff. I appreciate your mentioning that about me because I'm actually proud of that particular positioning in terms of where I am in regard to this whole, scene that we're in.
Well, and I'll wind up with this question. Do you still find that there is resistance among some radio executives to acknowledge all of these changes that you've identified and strategies that you have advocated to deal with this? Are there still some people dragging their feet in the sand?
But most everybody's dragging their feet in the sand because they either are working for a company that doesn't want to hear about it, or they're working for a company that is fighting off imminent bankruptcy. And their focus is not on dealing with anything outside of the immediate goal, and that is to kick the can down the road and pay this month's expenses and keep the stock prices from tanking and surviving. So survival gets in the way of all kinds of lofty thinking and all kinds of academia. They're paralyzed. They're trying to keep their jobs. Most of the executives that are running radio today are not the ones that caused the problem. Most of them have been washed away, and these are guys that inherited it. They're not bad people. They're not stupid people. They're just preoccupied with survival and with other business interests right now, and that's unfortunate. It's very, very unfortunate. And there you have it, a conversation I had with Western Massachusetts media legend G. Michael Dobbs, extracted from the interview he recently conducted with me for his podcast series titled The Ink-Stained Wretch with G. Michael Dobbs. For more information about G. Michael Dobbs, his commentaries, books, and podcasts, please visit his Facebook page at facebook.com/gmichael.dobbs. That's facebook.com/gmichael.dobbs. Thank you for downloading this program from Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Podcast One app. I can be reached directly at talkers.com. If you find this show to be of interest and value, please subscribe to it as well as giving it a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison, the Michael Harrison Interview. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Interview is a co-presentation of Podcast One and Talkers Magazine, produced by Good Phone Communications. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved.